Recording in progress.
All right. We will call the Champaign County Mental Health Board study session to order. Can I get a roll call, please?
Chris Miner.
Hi. Oh, here.
Lisa Liggins Chambers.
Molly McClay.
We'll do that.
Okay.
Molly's online.
We see her, but we can't. We have to call the meeting to order first, and then they can make a motion to allow Molly to participate remotely for one of the three reasons.
Sorry about that. Joe Omo Osagie.
Here.
Yeah. Elaine Palencia. Jen Straub.
Yes.
Jane Sprandle.
Yes.
John Paul Joaquin.
Yes. All right. With that, I will move for a motion to allow, this will be specific to one board member, correct? To allow Molly McClay to join remotely. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. All right. Those in favor have it. So Molly is allowed to join remotely. Thank you, Molly, for being here. And then the next item is the approval of the agenda.
I make a motion to approve the agenda as presented.
All right. Is there a second?
Seconded.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. Those in favor have it. Next item is citizen input and public participation. We'll limit each person to 5 minutes, a total of 20. If there's anyone in the audience or online that would like to make a statement, now is the time. Is there anyone online? Nope. All right. Seeing none, we'll move on to my comments. You know, obviously, today and next week, we have a lot of tough things to think about, you know, a lot of decisions that, you know, in previous years we haven't had to make tough decisions. Last year was kind of the start of that. You know, I do want to thank, you know, all the staff and the agencies for all the hard work they've put in. I know it's not easy filling in these applications. I know it's not easy, you know, doing all the work that they do, and I am grateful for all that these agencies are able to accomplish for the community, and I'm hoping that we can, you know, fund as much as we can and keep every agency and program thriving as much as possible. So with that, I'll move on to Lynn's comments.
So I'll just thank you for what you just said. This is hard to do. We've been living it for quite a while, for a few months now, really ready to be done with these tough decisions, tough questions, but I think we've asked some really good questions, and we've got some written responses for you in this packet. They are repeated in the board packet for next week so that everybody has access to all the same information directly from the agencies. Just a couple housekeeping things. For folks in the Zoom, to please sign into the chat, so that we know how to spell your name and the agency that you're affiliated with, if any. And then I'll try to keep showing stuff on the Zoom screen as we go. I think that's it. There's cookies and water in the room if you're interested. Okay. And then, so yeah, next week is the big meeting. Okay, bye.
All right. With that, we'll move on to the study session. Which is the Mental Health Board PY25 Requests and Continuing Awards by Priority on pages 2 through 3. I don't know if anyone had any questions about the chart. Any questions about distribution of the funding to the different priority categories? All right. With that, I will move on to the responses to questions and corrections of errors in draft PY25 program summaries on pages 4 through 34. I know there was a lot of questions we had during April's meeting, and these are a lot of responses to them. See if there's anyone that had any comments or questions about the responses.
I do have a comment. I highly appreciate Lynn and the other staff members who did such an excellent job of getting us, you know, responses back in a very timely, you know, manner and things like that. And, you know, if we'd even have clarification questions, they were always so, you know, nice to be like, oh, da da da. And so I appreciated that. So another appreciation to Lynn and our staff for always keeping us highly educated and motivated.
You know, I did appreciate Courage Connections' explanation of some of the funding and helping us understand that they're trying to help stabilize turnover, and that's kind of some of the issues they've been having. And so, you know, a good explanation of why the funding is, you know, what it is, I think was helpful. I don't know if we talked about it at the last meeting. I know we had some questions about Rosecrans, about, you know, why they have no wait for the mental health, for the psychiatrist. You know, I feel like there might be a bottleneck with Rosecrans, with their clinician being able to screen patients to get them in with psychiatry, because nowhere in the county is there a no wait for psychiatry. So I really hope that Rosecrans, you know, looks at that program and finds a way to make sure that there isn't a bottleneck with their clinician, their mental health clinician, to getting children in with the psychiatrist. I just wanted to make sure that I made that clear. Because there is a really long wait right now to get kids in with psychiatrists, and kids that are threatening to hurt themselves. And it's crazy, because then, you know, I really want them to be able to get in. If someone can get in there and not have to wait, that would be great. But, you know, if they have to wait to get the mental health clinician evaluation, that might be an issue that we need to address.
And personally, I was trying to make a psychiatry appointment for an adult child, and OSF in Champaign is not taking any new patients. And I was like, and I'm not even in a crisis right now. Granted, we can go to Danville, which is probably closer for me, but I wish there was a way, as a county, as a state, as a nation, we could recruit more providers, because the ones we have are phenomenal, but they're just overbooked. Thank you, Lisa. Lisa, we love you.
For OSF, I do know they have an inpatient program for crisis. I forget how long the admissions are. I think it's something, I remember I had patients that have been in for like 10 days and then they go home, but then the problem is follow-up. And that's not just OSF. Like, right. Pavilion has that issue too of like, okay, now the kid needs the follow-up. And so, you know, as physicians, we've tried to make that more seamless, but even then there's still shortage because there's just not enough providers. And so, you know, we have, as pediatricians, have taken on, okay, well, even if they've been admitted, as long as they're not suicidal or homicidal, having those thoughts, and they're on medications that are things that we're comfortable treating, we will continue to monitor them and treat them, as opposed to if they are on something that's outside of the tools that I use in my toolbox, then they will need to follow psychiatry. And so, you know, I know at least on the kids' side that we are working on trying to make that transition more seamless, but obviously there's always room for improvement. But yeah, it's just when there's already a shortage nationwide of all kinds of physicians and providers, specifically psychiatry, we want to make sure that all resources are being utilized. So
one thing that can be done is, in this state, psychologists can actually write prescriptions if they're licensed to do so. The challenge is that some physicians are not backing up the psychologists who can write prescriptions. So an alternative to the shortage is getting more psychologists licensed to write prescriptions, psychotropic medication. So a lot of people don't know that, but Illinois is one of the states that will grant licenses to psychologists who meet the criterion or have the qualifications to write prescriptions for psychotropic medications only.
Go ahead, Lynn.
Dr. Lisa, how long has that been? It's at least 4 years, right?
It's been a while. Don't quote me. But okay. If you go to the Department of Professional Regulation, it is listed prescribing psychologists how to meet criteria for that. And you definitely have to be licensed. I'm not sure if they have to go back to school. I'm assuming so, mm-hmm. in order to write prescriptions. But I'm not quite clear on that just because it's not something I want to do. So I haven't really researched it, but it is another option in this state, not only to license psychologists for writing prescriptions, but also to license psychologists, period. There's a problem with that in this state, across the nation, but also in this state. So if you do want to advocate for more of us, you got to start with advocating for them to grant licenses to all of us.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's really good to know. I didn't even know that. So yeah.
Like, I think this is an important advocacy issue. Not doesn't have anything to do with your funding decisions, yeah. But like it's really important, and there is a legislative session right now. So just like finding out why there's not a workforce taking advantage of that. Like, would be great. And then let's advocate for whatever the, you know, removal of whatever barriers. So thank you.
Yeah, one of the barriers is just the criterion to get licensed psychologists, get us licensed. I mean, it's really rough. You know, they take us through a lot almost as if we're medical doctors. And probably as far as licensing minority psychologists, compared to Caucasian licensed psychologists, it might be about, don't quote me guys on the percentage, but there's a huge gap. How about we leave it at that? First time folks pass an exam even to get licensed, and there is a problem because the, you know, for example, minority psychologists are just not passing an exam the first time, and so they're taking the exam over and over and over again, and that's not being addressed in this state as problematic. So you have good clinicians who just are unable to get their license, you know, because they can't pass the test, and it's not for lack of knowledge. You know, it's not the fact that they aren't good clinicians. The exam lacks face validity. And so it's not measuring clinical skills. So they're expected to know stuff, for example, from like 1920. Who cares about 1920? And they're refusing to change the licensing standards. So that's part of the problem as to why you don't have enough licensed psychologists, especially licensed psychologists of color. And color doesn't just mean African-American.
Just my two cents on this. One, you know, that's a shame because we also know that every time you have to take that test, which clearly is, you know, biased, you know, you're also then paying more money for this biased test. But my curiosity before you said that, and I started to get my blood pressure up again, is that, you know, I wonder if training programs are now responding to the idea that you know, being licensed to write scripts is a possibility. You know, if they're including that in their new training, we would be so much closer. That's all.
As far as I know, is state to state. So we're lucky to be in Illinois because Illinois does grant this prescribing license to psychologists. I can't speak for states outside of Illinois because I just haven't researched it. But I do think that we are pretty lucky here because that is an alternative. It's just that programs may not, because a lot of people don't know that. But if you, again, if you go to the Department of Professional Registration, it is there under clinical psychologist. And the other thing is they're not necessarily training to pass the exam either. You know, they may talk about it, but there's no real training. So you're right. You know, we have to deal with this test that is completely biased. So when you guys have clients that are, or even patients that are saying, hey, I had to be on the waiting list. I hear about it every day for 2 years to get testing. This is why we don't have enough licensed psychologist. We have a lot of licensed social workers because the social workers do it the right way. You know, they license their people out of school unless you're going to go in private practice, and Miley can talk more about that. But for us, it's totally different.
Well, thank you, Dr. Liggins Chambers. That's very informative. Like, so many things I did not know, you know. So, yeah. It's hard to know how to fix things until you know what the obstacles are, you know. So, yeah. Anyone else? Any other comments, questions?
Go ahead.
Oh, Molly, do you have any questions or comments?
Not yet.
All right. All right. With that, I'll move on to the discussion of PY25 funding allocation process on page 35. Go ahead. You can go ahead, Lynn.
Well, there's a lot of exciting context first with links to the priorities memo from last November. Here's why. Okay, so there's that list that you have just before all the responses from the agencies that organizes contracts or requests by priority also shows your current two-year commitments. So these are commitments that you made last year to programs that that were suitable for two-year contracting. And the idea of two-year contracting is it's hopefully stabilizes a little bit for the agencies, and then it also reduces the number of applications that you're looking at each year, especially if they remain similar from one year to the next. So that's an amount of money right off the top that you're committed to, and it's $2.1 million. And I have to split the DD amount separate from that because of the intergovernmental agreement between this board and the DD board. There's a specific amount set aside for DD. So one of those contracts is for DD, which is why about a month ago I gave you a really scary budget forecast and then realized I had double counted that. So then now the shortfall between the total of the requests that you're looking at and what I think is affordable for the next 6 months and then the first 6 months of 2025 is only about $175,000 difference. But that still wasn't easy because there's not a whole lot of applications to consider. So I appreciate all of the input from board members and from agencies and from Leon and other staff. We've been talking about this so much that I've put it out of my mind. But, you know, here's where on the screen I'm showing, how I calculated the amounts per priority. I don't know. That balance is difficult to say means something because everything in the safety and crisis stabilization category, you might want to say where is the federal and state governments when it comes to safety net funding? We know that they have not adequately funded a crisis system. So this is that category, that priority category is really important ethically, but it's also one that we advocate a lot for the state and feds to do better. Then the others tend to be more areas of prevention, promotion, and then the healing from interpersonal violence. Unfortunately, you know, that category grew last year as the VOCA money went away, which and it's not back. But anyway, golly. I should get more sleep the day before meetings. So here's the discussion of the budget impact. It goes on and on and on. Money's been going rising and rising for many years. And this year we have the smallest projected increase in a really long time. It's 3.4 5% projected for 2025, which is half the money. And we've been looking at like 7% and 8% for the last few years. So that was, I mean, I wasn't really surprised, but it puts us in a little bit of a bind. So then you've got, you know, there's a breakdown of comparisons and the projected increase. So I came up with this target of 4,852,353 for mental health and substance use contracts and 889,119 for DD contracts. And then these notes on affordability really like trying to show you, because it's 6 months now, it's money we have or we are pretty sure is coming in, and then 6 months of 2025, which there are reasons to wonder what will happen in 2025. So I, you know, coming up, like I'm basing these assumptions on relatively stable change, and next year could surprise us, but this is what I think is affordable. And then in the decision sections, we have, this memo is going to be modified. It's in your board packet for next week with some motions inserted and the affordability notes taken out. And then going through each of the recommendations related to the funding requests, wherever there's a concern expressed, that's taken out and a motion is put in. But the amounts that we're recommending in this memo are the same as the amounts that I've put in for your meeting next week. But if this discussion substantially changes that, I can get you a new memo in the next couple of days to support next week's meeting. But we really, this was really tough. There's just not enough money to do everything. And I think Elaine Palencia said these applications have gotten better and better over the years. That was my impression as well. I don't know. There are still gaps. There are things, obviously, when you asked questions, we found things that could be better. So those are showing up as concerns in some of these. And then, you know, it just kind of goes through each one. If you want to do that, we can. But I also, the very last page is a chart of the recommendations with yellow highlights on everything that's recommended for less than the request, but you don't have yellow highlights in the paper book, so I made copies. You're okay with that?
Yeah.
Joe, did I give you the... Okay. I just thought it might be easier to read. Anyway, that's all I have to say. Sorry.
Again, don't be sorry. Thank you for, again, you and the staff for all your guys' hard work. I really appreciate it. I know this is not an easy process for staff or the board or agencies. I'll give people, you know, a minute to look at things.
And I don't know if you've gotten...
So there's
like,
about 11 agencies that, or 11 programs that are going to receive, or the recommendation is for less funding for about 11 programs on here. Just so everyone knows.
And you might notice that I didn't even make the target. What I thought would be affordable is this. There's 3,625,386 for these mental health and substance use contracts, and then the DD portion is down here. And as you can see, I didn't quite make the target, like $60 over. And I thought, well, we'll just spend less on postage.
Or actually 12 agencies, sorry, I said 11, 12. I miss the U change on there. Okay.
Does this include some of the things that we've talked about?
Yes. I think we had some really good discussions. You know, one or two board members at a time with us, and really interesting things came up. I don't think we can implement everything we talked about, so if something is missing that is important to you, please let me know. I tried to cover We had a lot of concerns that I thought we could cover with just asking for more information, but that might not be right. There might be more that we need to do. So.
I like that a lot of these cuts are kind of like we've spread the pain out a little bit, if that makes sense. You know, not all of them. I know that there are some programs here with very significant cuts, but a lot of these cuts are maybe cuts in which people can tweak their budgets just a little bit and still have some really effective and really wonderful programming for our county. I think that you all did a great job.
There were three that had either errors or something we shouldn't pay for. They amounted to very, very small differences, and those were Grow, GCAP, and Terrapin, just very small amounts less than requested. But that was based on discussion with them, too, of errors. Like, or we saw the error, or GCAP gave us a whole bunch of good detail, which is in the packet. But then for the most part, like, a lot of the agencies that are getting what they've requested haven't requested an increase, or they haven't gotten an increase for a long time, one or the other. And man, that was hard.
And then the ones that are getting the recommendation for less than requested funding are ones that, even though it's less funding, it's more funding than we've funded in previous years. Like for wind recovery, for example. Go ahead, Molly.
I don't know if you want me to do the hand raising thing or to just talk, whatever y'all prefer. I also just wanted to make like a linguistic clarification. I know sometimes we default to using the term cut because it's an easier way to describe or just shorter, but like I am thinking of it more as reductions to the requested amount. Like, we're not cutting funding from programs, we're for the programs that are not getting as much as they requested. That's like we're reducing the request, not cutting something that is already there. I just wanted to sort of make that note, because I know kind of throughout the process I've had conversations that terminology has come up as something to consider.
Thank you, Molly. I really appreciate you pointing out that clarification, because that is important to make note of.
So just for clarification, like with Rosecrans, it appears, just doing the math in my head, not on math, that they're taking the least percentage-wise hit from the total money they're coming. So with criminal justice and with crisis co-response, they were getting that amount last year. That's why they're not getting a cut? Okay.
No, those are both a 5% increase. The benefits, case management, criminal justice, and crisis co-response all have a 5% increase. Recovery Home has been at that level for a long time. Child and Family Services, the recommendation is to keep it at the level that it's been. And then Specialty Courts also to keep it at the current level.
Okay, more for clarification. I'm new to this. So why are they getting a 5% increase while some people are losing? Is it because of their wonderful serving of the demographics of the community, or...
Well, there were a lot of increases that were for much more than 5%, and those are not being fully funded, but the increase they're getting is more than 5%, even with a couple thousand lopped off. But trying to, but I hear you.
And there is attached to start actually serving people other than white folks to that, right? My concern is this. Look, they're monopolizing. They're taking the nonprofit and they're turning it into social entrepreneurship, which just means it's capitalism. And they're growing, growing, growing. And now they're trying to step into my avenue, which is the criminal justice one. They're not liked in the community. I'm on the streets. I'm not saying that everyone else here isn't. They're not doing a good job. The numbers don't really show they're serving the community. They're serving their community. I don't know. Like I said, I definitely have a bias against them from personal because I hear how bad they are and this and that. So I just, I don't know. Yeah, we'll just go ahead and shut Chris up before he says any more.
No, keep on going, man.
It's just the more funding we give them, the more we allow them to grow. And I know we have no competition in them, and that's a problem. And we're never going to have competition if we just keep feeding them, feeding them. We're feeding the status quo, and we're letting it get worse. Is the community safer? I've been in Chicago the last 3 years. I don't think it's any safer when I came back. I don't really see what they're doing. They should stick to just the mental health counseling. And it seems like they want to grow and grow and encroach and encroach and just suck up all the funding they can. But then again, like I said, I don't know the inner workings. I'm still new to this, but I'm just seeing the evil empire.
Can I rephrase that a little bit?
Yeah, you probably do it a little better.
Let me help you out here.
Thank you.
You know, I think Chris raised some good points. And I think when we met all of us one-on-one with, or in a group, in different groups, as you mentioned, we all brought up things that, you know, we want to see happen. One of the things that I'll have to share, and I think I shared it at our last meeting, is that I am disappointed in the different demographics. And I will say this over and over again. I've been in mental health for many, many years. I'm not going to say over about 30 years at this point. And it is shocking to see that some of these agencies are calling themselves community services and doing outreach, yet are not actually serving the entire community. And so when we talked about, you know, funding, we also talked about different things that, you know, maybe we can make contingent upon, you know, funding, you know, not initial funding, because we want all of the organizations to be funded, obviously, because we need them. But some of these smaller agencies, like, for example, you know, Wind Recovery, I mean, I know Molly mentioned that they're not actually losing money, but it looks that way to a new person. And so here you have an agency, like Chris said, that is trying to dominate in our area, but they're not serving everybody. But then you have smaller agencies who actually have better demographics. So it feels, or it looks, or it seems as if the other agencies are being rewarded, although they are not serving the community. And these smaller ones that actually have better demographics, I mean, they're not getting full funding. I don't know how that's fair statistically, given their demographics, but also with their funding. So if you don't mind, would you kindly just kind of share, just for educational purposes, how that works?
Well, there were other concerns with almost all of the other agencies. So it's not really apples and oranges from my perspective, what the things that we know from performance reports and the concerns that have been raised by other people. There's stuff everywhere. So you could, if you like that as a principle, holding all of the Rosecrans amounts at level to this year. The one that's difficult to do this with is the CCRT, because you're asked to take on the piece which has used Urbana Police as the referral hub for people who are in crisis. So it's difficult to see, like, I mean, maybe you just take 5% off of those, of the three that would be benefits, case management, criminal justice, and crisis co-response. If you took 5% off of each of those, then you could add more money to other things. I don't have an explanation of why I would want to reward someone for doing poorly with demographics, because I wasn't thinking of it that way. I was thinking we have sort of an ecosystem of agencies. We were talking about not expanding anything, and this scenario doesn't really expand anything. It adds GCAP, and that's the only new thing it adds. It doesn't fully fund the proposed expansion at First Followers or Women in Need Recovery, but it gives each of them an increase on only because they haven't had an increase in a long time, not with the expectation that they could do the expansion. So it was more like, you know, don't do the extra stuff, but here's some extra money, you know.
I don't have the numbers in front of me. You might be able to confirm this, Doctor. Doesn't it seem like the organizations we fund the most are the ones that have the biggest problems with serving the correct demographics? Win First Followers, Terrapin, all those people, they're serving everybody. Then once we get up to where we're paying them more, it's like they do less. They don't do less. They just serve. I don't know if that's selective or not, but somehow they're just not advertising where they need to be advertising. And they're paying all these consultants. Can't one of them be like, hey, we need to be here. We need to reach these people. We're paying you. It's your job. And you don't come in here and tell us that, well, these people just don't come to us, which I think I kind of heard a couple times a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, go ahead, Molly.
I was wondering if are we going to go through each program and kind of talk about each one individually, in addition to kind of having a larger discussion about kind of the whole application pool that we're doing right now?
I mean, we can do it however as a group we decide we want to. If you want to go down one by one, if people have time, we can definitely do that.
I would say I'm okay with that, but before we do that, I had a couple general Rosecrans questions. But
yeah, no, go ahead.
Okay, so I feel like we, and I'm saying this very respectfully to everyone who's watching, listening, and in the room, I think we've kind of brought up some big worms out of the can just now. And so I guess I am questioning maybe clarification. When you say they're not serving, and I'm not questioning you, I need educated here. They're not serving all demographics. Are you saying that if an African American person or a Hispanic person goes in and asks for services, are they being turned away? Or how are they discriminating against other demographics?
I would never accuse an agency or any of you of being discriminatory. So we're going to scratch that from the record, because that's that's not what I said. That's not what Chris said.
Okay, but not serving all demographics. So I guess give me an example of not serving all demographics.
You had an example in your binder last week. If you looked at the demographics that each company that's asking for funding showed, you could see the breakdown between gender and race. And that's why I talked about it, because when I looked at it, and all of you have this information, the dominant culture and gender actually that's being served is Caucasian men. And so that's why I brought it up, is if you are serving the community, it's no different than me. If I decide to open a private practice and I say I'm serving the community, I mean you, Latin, Asian, everybody, I can serve a dog on dog. But I'm not going to ask the mental health board for close to $1 million without showing that I care about the community enough to do outreach. And to justify your lack of outreach by, for example, and this is not coming from me, this came from them, and also you gave the example of a family that you worked with that said, we just don't do that. You remember that? Okay. That's what I call something totally different, that mindset, but it perpetuates what you mentioned, and so what's happening is you have a whole, race of different people who aren't being served. So you can't say you serve the community if you're not in the community doing outreach. And that's my point.
So does that get back to the reputation? Maybe the talk on the street is that they're maybe not as accepting to all demographics.
Yes, but that's their job, is to be accepting, to confront that. Yeah, because what it is when they blame the culture, they're victim blaming. They're saying, oh, you don't want help. It's not our problem. No, you need to go to them and tell them, educate them, get in the schools, because I believe they said they were in the schools. That's questionable. A lot of stuff they said was questionable. They straight up lied to me when I asked, do you have any people on your staff that have lived experience? Oh, we don't know. You don't do background checks? That's a different thing. I don't remember that.
Yeah, but I think that's who they're serving versus who is doing the serving. Those are two different things. I don't know if we can necessarily dictate their staff.
But if you have representative populations doing the serving, it's more welcome. Those closest to the problem are closest to the solution. I'm sorry to keep saying that, but it is. If you have black folks, it's going to be more receptive to black folks coming in. When you have criminal justice thing, you got someone who's been locked up or has the experience, it's more like, oh, I understand. Okay, you might get me. A shared trauma isn't necessarily a good thing, but it means talking. For instance, an example, just a quick one, I'm not going to commandeer the whole meeting. At First Followers, I worked for them for years. I was a peer mentor. I'd sit down across from a 21-year-old black man who would not say a word to me. I'm like, I look like your parole officer, right? Big, bald, white dude. Yeah. I'm like, R66343. Boom. Rapport is built. And it's all about building rapport within your community. And they don't seem interested in doing that. They seem interested in hearing a bunch of MSWs that come out of UIUC because a lot of my friends are there now.
Help yourself. I'm kidding. let me just jump in for a moment here. I mean, before Rosecrans was Rosecrans, and yes, I've been in this community for a while, worked at a mental health center, Champaign County Mental Health Center, before it became Rosecrans. And we did outreach. I mean, I was an outreach worker. Went to the schools, went to the homes, went into the neighborhoods. It wasn't about having an MSW or LCS or whatever. It was about getting to know the population in the school, in the church. When I went to churches also, I was in the basement of Salem and did all those kinds of things. And I think that is what is missing. And that is what we're talking about. I mean, when you have a worker who is committed to being a part of the community as an outreach worker, not just you've got to come to my office to meet me, then you're really working with a person and working with a family in every which way you can. Yes, John is a doctor. He has to stay in his office. However, I wasn't one of a doctor. I was out in the street with them.
I would argue also that if you're taking public money to do a public service, for a lot of folks in our community, coming into some of these agencies is not necessarily welcoming for everybody. You know, people have been disenfranchised by the healthcare industry. They've been disenfranchised by the government. You know, they've been disenfranchised in lots of different ways. So if you're taking public money, and, you know, and I work for an agency that, you know, we are the public, right? So the people that we serve, and I'm only speaking from my experience now, the people that we serve don't always just walk in the door when they need help. Sometimes the people that we serve, we give a bottle of water to on the street, you know, for weeks, you know, and then maybe it's a rain poncho. And then maybe, you know, 2 months down the road, they come in and they start asking about services that are, you know, that the ones that are actually going to save their lives. And it's a little different when we're talking about mental health, certainly. But the point is the connections have to be made. So if you know that there are groups of folks in our community hurting, and then everybody who is serving these populations knows they are, then what is the work that you need to do to get those folks in the door? That's all.
Well, and again, like, I'm not trying to like defend myself, but I really just needed a better knowledge, you know. And I think what's so wonderful about the group of us is we all come from different sectors of life. And, you know, I guess I just needed a clarification of that, because I don't want them to be in like, oh yeah, we serve all. But then word on the street is, if you're not Caucasian, they don't want to deal with you because you could be dangerous or you could be whatever. And I just wanted that clarification. And again, a couple of you have met with me on some of these things. I'm not 100% supporter of everything Rosecrans does. I have a lot of questions. But again, we talked, I think you had brought up the word about monopolizing. Well, no offense, but my friend here works for a big monopoly. I mean, let's just be honest.
Who?
I mean, so yeah, because I'm all about, you know, the Open Meetings Act and so like that, I wish we could have had this conversation just quietly talking, but because you can't do that, I'm glad that we feel comfortable to bring up some things. Today I was in a meeting, I brought up the word grace. And, you know, I always say, I don't ever want to offend someone, but I just, sometimes I just have to ask the question. I may not say it eloquently. You know, we did, and I totally 100% believe we need more, you know, non-Caucasian teachers and doctors and lawyers and things like that. But I've been a school board president for 9 years, and I can tell you how many people who, of non-Caucasian, you know, ancestry applied at my school district. Probably about 3. I mean, we just couldn't recruit them. But that doesn't mean that I was a bad school board president or I had a bad superintendent. We just couldn't get them to come, even though we wanted them and tried to recruit them.
I think we don't really have to justify this. The numbers do. They speak for themselves, you know, so we don't have to continuously talk about our opinions to me or stance on it. You know, if these agencies welcome minorities, that's great. There is a reason why they aren't showing up and why their numbers are low. And that was my point, and that we need to either work with them to make sure that those numbers increase, or we, if they don't want to, because the word on the street is that they are not welcoming to minorities either for employment or services. That is the word on the street. We can change that because we do need them, but they have to be willing to change.
And that's what I needed to hear. I needed to hear that the word on the street or the people who have or have tried or who are currently receiving services don't feel like it's a welcoming environment, that they're going to be able to grow and continue to be better in themselves and a community member. So thank you for that insight, because I wasn't aware.
And it's a bias. It's in and of itself, you know, to justify your numbers by saying Black people don't seek mental health care. That's a bias in and of itself. And that's what I think is communicated to the community. But when I went to church on Sunday, I received a standing ovation for talking about mental health and letting them know that some of the big agencies think that our community does not want to seek mental health services. Do you all realize that one of the problems is exactly what you said, Joe, that they aren't reaching out to you? Have, let me, and then I'll be done, I promise. You have an African-American superintendent in Champaign schools. You have an African, I think she's African-American in Urbana, right? You have all Black pastors, including mine, within a mile or two radius. Some people have never even heard of some of these big agencies. So this is not a matter of the community not wanting to receive mental health services. This is about the agency not reaching out. And that's where I want to stay focused, because we can change that together as long as they're willing. But if they're resistant and they keep justifying their problems with their statistics, because it is a problem with the fact that, you know, the African American community, for example, does not seek mental health care, then they don't want to change. And that's why I think we have a problem with their numbers. They're too high if they're not going to serve the community, everyone in the community.
Yeah. And so, I just wanted to say thank you for asking the question. If you need clarification, get clarification, because I'm in academia where I can't ask questions like that, or I'll get canceled.
So,
like I said, I usually probably don't say it very eloquently, but my intent and my grace and love is always there. Please believe that.
I'm the least eloquent person on the board, so it works.
So, you know, I just want to say one thing before we move on to going through these through the programs. You know, as someone in medicine, one thing we have is quality improvement projects. I don't know if other people have it too. And so, you know, we all have blind spots, and we don't know it, you know, until someone tells us, and we have to take things, you know, and have thick skin and try to take it as constructive criticism to improve those things. It's not, doesn't mean anybody's doing something bad. Like, they're not, it doesn't mean anything about your, like, you're a bad person or a bad agency or anything like that. As long as you're taking it as a constructive criticism and using it to improve upon, you know, your deficits, you know, like, even as in our clinics, like, you know, things that we do is trying to make sure kids are seeing the dentist and brushing their teeth and, you know, because there's increased risk of cavities, and we didn't talk about those things before, and so we had more kids with cavities, and so, like, okay, we need to work on this. Oh, kids aren't going to see the eye doctor. Oh, we're making sure, like, kids are having speech delay, making sure they're getting in and getting that, you know, caught up sooner. Like, there's certain things that you always want to be improving upon, looking at any of your weaknesses as an organization or as a person or as a company, and trying to improve upon those things. And if you're not, then, you know, things will slowly deteriorate, and, you know, you may not be as successful as you are hoping you should be. So I just hope that, you know, the agencies listening take things with as constructive criticism and try to, you know, maybe do a quality improvement project to improve different aspects of their programs and agencies. I don't know if Molly's on, if she has any comments or questions, but we can go to the first program if you want, which is the homeless service system coordination. It's on page 41. So the recommendation was to fund it at the requested annual level and offer a two-year term. And honestly, I didn't have any problem with doing that. You know, we do fund most of it, about 74% of the program. And then, yeah, I didn't have any issues with that. Did anyone have any questions about the first program? No. All right. The next program was the CU at Home Shelter Case Management Program for $256,000, again, 66% of the total program revenue.
This and the previous one have been at these levels for a long time.
Yeah, there's no increase. So.
And this, they did have a comment in the application about exploring a new service delivery model, which would make this level of funding, well, they have other sources of funding, so they might not need more than from the Mental Health Board, but I thought it sort of indicated to me, like, they might not take a two-year contract.
Okay.
I still think we should offer, but yeah. Okay.
Any questions about this program? I can't see if Molly knows.
This is Molly. I just wanted to highlight on this program and the previous one, under the concerns area, the mention of the fact that, like, securing funding from other sources may be something important for the future, especially considering that other units of government experience benefit from these programs and may be able to contribute financially. I just wanted to make sure that that was highlighted.
Thank you, Molly. Any other questions, comments? All right. The next one is the CU Early, and that is for $80,000, 16% of total program revenue. Again, this one is to fund, I forgot how many, if it's one or two employees that are bilingual that are serving Spanish-speaking households, and Mayan as well. And I personally interact with the people who do this, and they are an amazing group, and they are basically, like, they seem like they're family with these people that they're serving. When they come in, they are playing with the kids in the office and, you know, have a great rapport with mom. Like, mom seems to trust them, you know, very, like, they have a very strong bond, it seems like. And she's the workers are great advocates for these families, and they make sure they get their appointments. They make sure if there's any questions that they get answered. And, it's a great program, and I can't say enough good things about this. So I am glad that you guys recommended funding at the requested level and offering a two-year term for this program.
There's bad news.
No, don't tell me bad news.
The bad news is just we learned since your study session that ISBE is not going to do the RFP again. And so that's why a two-year term would actually be helpful.
Okay.
That, you know, we were hoping a one-year term and then the ISBE funding would come back, but they're not issuing the RFP next year. So I like two-year terms, but...
Okay.
I just wanted to state that the fact that ISBE is not going to be offering that is extremely disappointing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they reach people that are very hard to reach in the community that have a hard time accessing resources and knowing how to access resources, you know. So I'm just glad that we have him. So with that, we'll move on to the early childhood mental health services for $388,000. It's 100% of total program revenue. So we're recommending funding $3,000 less. And I can't remember what the funding was the previous year. It was, it's only a 12, it's a 12% increase. So it was $347,000 last year. So it's an increase about, I can't do math, $38,000. Yeah, about 12%. But the recommended increase will be a little less than 12%. So it'll be about 10.9, so 11% increase instead. Any questions about this one? No. All right, we'll move on to the disability services. That's for $105,000, 94% of total program revenue. The recommendation is for $3,000 less and offering a two-year term. I didn't have any questions about this one. It's about, well, it was going to be a 15% increase. So it'd probably be a little less than that.
Did they lose money for a reason?
Sorry, it's the opposite. You're right. It's the opposite because they had...
This was, I think it was $91,500 this last year. And the year before it was $71,000. Yeah. So I mean, I appreciate... This is a really good program and we heard great things about it. And I, you know... That was an uncomfortable reduction to recommend to you, but they have a lot of fundraised funds. I don't know if they've applied a lot of fundraised funds to any of the programs funded by the Mental Health Board, but they do a little. So my hope was maybe they could do more. Yeah. This was not about like programs not worth it.
Yeah.
And so, I appreciate the conversation that y'all just had. Very appreciate that. And I think, you know, this program has pretty good reach. It may have reached, I think Molly McClay and I looked at comparison of this one with the benefits program at Rosecrans, and that one actually reached more people than this one. So, but they're both very important service. Yeah. So, okay.
Yeah, so it's going up about 11.5%. Any questions about this one? And I agree with the recommendation for a two-year term. The next one is Courage Connection. Go ahead.
Just from the perspective of what mental health boards are most well suited to do by statute and by the operating environment, those benefits acquisition programs are like gold, like that and prevention, just. Mm-hmm. Like, no, there's just no reason not to fund stuff like that if it's working, so.
Yeah. again, it still just kills me that we have to fund people to help people get benefits from the government. So the government has to fund to hire people in the community to help people in the community get funds from the government. Like, just, it's so circular.
Like me, you can't figure out
it should just be automatic. Like, can we just get AI to just do it now? Just like swipe a card. Just like, okay, you get this, you know, like you shouldn't even have to do your taxes. Like, come on. Like, it should already be automatically calculated. Like, how is that not already like government information?
I think it's a culture of cruelty.
I was going to say, apropos of that, even when they get benefits, it's typically not even enough to like fund a market rate apartment in our community.
Yeah, all that work just to still barely be struggling and maybe not still make it, you know. Yeah, very stressful. Did we cover Courage Connection?
I interrupted.
Oh, sorry. So it's okay. No, it's all right. So Courage Connection, it's $128,000, less than a $1,000 increase from previous year. So less than 1% increase on the recommended against 5% of total program revenue. They recommended funding at the requested level and offering a 2-year term. You know, I didn't have any questions about that one. All right. The next one is the ECHO Housing and Employment Support for $203,000. And then previous year, wait, yeah, previous year was, I know this one's a big increase. It was $127,000 last year. So it's a 60% increase. You know, it's covering 100% full-time employment counselor, 50% full-time case aide, which is vacant at the time of the application, 25% of full-time case manager, and then a lot of other little portions of other jobs. I mean, I guess my understanding of this one was that it's going to help the caseworker with the case aid. So they're not going to be seeing as many more, like a bunch more people. It's just they're helping those people more. Yeah, go ahead.
This has a... I think the answers that they gave us were pretty good and not like super long to read. This wasn't, the question was about that specific assistance line, like how do they figure that out? It's for flexible funds, like the high fidelity wraparound, which we know is a very effective approach. The reason for recommending a lower amount than requested was partly it's a large agency, but also because Illinois is working on 1115 waiver, which will reimburse certain housing supports. Like that's, they're not, Illinois is not like jumping ahead into, like there's, food is medicine, is a coming 1115 waiver option. Illinois does not appear poised to do that, but housing supports, they might do. I don't know. I don't have enough connection. I think Cunningham probably knows a lot more than I do about where Illinois is at with that proposal. But that just seemed to me like maybe there will be relief next year for them.
So this will be an increase of 57%. But obviously it's hiring more people to provide more services. So that is the reason for the increase.
No, the specific assistance was the bigger.
The bigger.
Go ahead. You're right, the hiring of the case aid, but also that increase in specific assistance, which is for high-fidelity wraparound purchases, like a bus pass.
Yeah, because what, I mean, since I also worked there at some point in my life, is that many of young people coming out of places like this, if they don't have that high-fidelity wraparound, end up in a correctional system. Yeah. Pretty much go from somewhere like Cunningham to wherever, and that's what we're trying to prevent. It's pay me now, pay me later. That's what happens.
So I mean, it looks like.
I think.
I'll go ahead,
John. Sorry.
I'd say it's about 44,000 for like the staff personnel, and then like another 29,000 for like the assistants. Just for clarification.
Yeah, I was going to add that the high fidelity wraparound support, I think, is a really effective approach. And I also really appreciate when an agency is thinking about an expansion, not just in terms of expanding reach to the client populations they're working with, but also expansion in terms of taking care of staff. And I think the idea behind this, is my understanding, was partly to help the caseload of the case manager by having this case aid. That's not something that I necessarily am seeing a lot of attention to, but I think, you know, we have a major problem of burnout in the mental health field, and caseload management and caseloads getting really large is a big part of that. So when an agency is making active efforts to reduce the burden on the staff and trying to get them some support, I think that's something that's to be commended.
Oh, that's right. I agree, Molly. Thank you so much. And again, staff recommended offering a 2-year term. And then hopefully they can fill the position as well. With that, we'll move on to the next one, which is the Family Stronger Together, also by Cunningham. Again, we fund about 100%. We fund 100% of it. It's $282,000, recommended full funding, and offering a 2-year term.
And if I recall, this was the program that is requesting less than they have in the past because they got additional funding.
So it's about 30% less.
Love to see it.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you add all of Cunningham's requests, like, they're asking for less overall total, because this is about 117,000 less. So. And they're not just going to keep asking more and more. They, you know, trying to find other sources of funding. They're trying to be, you know, purposeful with the funds that they're using. So I do really appreciate that.
I will never stop thinking about how we can work ourselves out of this job, because when it comes down to it, why don't we as a society do the right thing? Invest in people.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that's the purpose of the people that have the power right now, right? It's about just keeping more power for yourself and making sure you have more money for yourself for the future, as opposed to, you know, serving the community and making sure the community as a whole is healthy. You know. Yeah. Sorry, I don't mean to be cynical or pessimistic. Sorry. So the next item is the CU change. It's for $85,000. I also forgot to say, I don't know if I already said, we're offering a 2-year term for Cunningham for the Family Stronger Together. And then for CU change, it's $85,500, and staff recommended $3,000 less, $82,500. And then that would be an increase still, because last year was 75,000, so about 7,000 more, so about 10%, about 7,500 more, so about 10% increase from previous year. So that's still not bad. And I don't have my pages. I forgot to bring 45 and 46 with me.
Oh, I have it. So thank you.
I left it at home. I'm so sorry. Thanks. So staff recommended a 2-year term may not be appropriate. Yeah. So I guess we'd offer a one-year term on this one. For which one? For the CU change.
Just
because of the changes that they're going through, and they may want a different amount.
And also, like, Leon hasn't said a single word, but this is a program he works very closely with.
You can go ahead, Leon.
It's not that I'm afraid to speak. It's I'm just keeping some of my comments to myself. Yeah, I work closely with Don Moyer Boys and Girls Club. I used to work for the organization, and I was the director of the program, so I know how the program works inside and out. It's the mission, the scope of the program is very good. You know, it's an intensive case management program. You know, their target number is on point. I think it's 20 per case on the caseload, which is awesome. As I said before, it's very intensive. A lot of work working with the families, going into the schools, checking on the youth, making sure they're attending classes, pulling grades. It's a pretty solid program, but I think, you know, some of the challenges historically has been just keeping staff on board, and you know, some of the administrative challenges, I'll just say that. Again, I like the aim of the program, but I think 1 year would be appropriate just to kind of gauge and see how things go. So that's just my two cents.
Go ahead.
What's not being said here? Mm-hmm. I got a feeling there's something, and I don't know. Is there something that anybody? Maybe I'm just completely misreading the room. I do that from time to time.
This year has been very stable compared to a couple of years ago when I think we had 11. Was it 11? I don't know. There was an amazing number of agencies with brand new directors, and then there was turnover at the top level. So when there's turnover like that in a large agency like this, you know, trying to serve kids who are not connected, that can be really tricky. They have asked to continue participating in that evaluation project as a target program to work on outcomes. The outcome I want them to work on maybe sounds ridiculous to professionals in the field. I just want kids to have hope, you know, and so, like, you know, and for the program to allow itself to simplify towards helping these kids get connected and have hope. But they're, like Leon said, they've been in transition for the last few years.
Did they ever have a two-year agreement? Then what changed now to where they're having one? Is it what you said about the administration and the turnover and the unstable program?
You know, we could offer a two-year term and see what happens. Frankly, I was concerned that they would say no because it was less than requested. Because the increases, while it was a high percentage, the increases were just like staff costs were 3% increased, and then there were some overhead pieces that seemed reasonable. So I was worried that they would say they can't do this for 2 years for that amount of money. But we could offer and find out.
I personally, and I can't speak for everyone, but I would like to discuss that a little bit more with them. I mean, you know, it is one of the long-serving programs in this area as well. They do service kids. You know, this is a good program. So I don't know if this is remember, I was the one that had the question about how much they were asking to make sure they were asking for enough money, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, because I was concerned because we do need to keep our child programs. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have direct access to the schools, which some of the other organizations aren't even going into the schools. So when I hear about that, I know that they are doing outreach, you know, not just for everyone, but, you know, they're probably working with parents and everything. And so I think we need to try to, you know, keep this program, but also to fund them and maybe offer them a longer contract. If they turn it down, they turn it down.
Okay.
But they're pretty stable in the community. So I would hate to see us not treat them the same as the other agencies.
This is a very similar population to that served by Cunningham's Family Stronger Together. These are kids who are, you know, maybe coming from JDC. So it's a really important population, but they're also, it is very hard to connect with them continuously. I think that's been an issue, right?
I mean, absolutely. This is, again, this is intensive, so you have to... an intensive case management program. So you have to find out where the youth are. You have to spend time with the families to create, to build that wraparound support for the youth. You have to attend IEP meetings. You need to, if they're in JDC, see if you can set up appointments to visit the youth there. Again, just... And I'm trying my best not to be biased because I know the program applied, you know, for funds for the program. At some point, we were aiming too high. Our number target number was 50. And so when you have 50 on a caseload for one person, that's entirely too much. Even for two people, based on the, I think they had maybe we had about 9 different outcomes that we were trying to reach. So in working with them over the years, we've narrowed down their outreach, their outcomes, I'm sorry, to approximately 3 to 4, which is more doable, and lower the target number of youth on the caseload to now 20. I think the challenge for Don Moyer Boys and Girls Club is going to be the stability of the staff, keeping the staff on board. I'm a little concerned about their COO, who is the director for the case manager. She's taken on part of that role in addition to everything else that she has on her plate. So I'm looking at things from top down, down up. I'm seeing, just keep my eyes on it, because one of the programs I used to, you know, facilitate, run. Again, I love the intention there. I'm just a little leery about, can they do an effective job of outreach, case management, wraparound, given what they have, given the one person that's the coordinator or the case manager, and then Ms. Miles being the COO of the program, of Don Moyer, being able to manage that in addition to everything else that she has on her plate. So I'm just a little skeptical.
Thank you for pulling out. I kind of get the gist of what's going on. And we're all biased. It's okay.
I mean, I can appreciate both, you know, perspectives. I think, you know, Dr. Lisa Liggins Chambers has a good point. I think, you know, I would leave it up to Don Moyer Boys and Girls Club to make a decision of how they feel of what they have planned for the program. And if they want to take a 2-year contract, I would offer it to them. And then just leave it up to them, you know. Yeah.
If we were to offer a 2-year term and anything substantially changed with the program, staffing or the way it was being run, could we then adjust it next year to account for that? I guess this is a question to Lynn and Leon.
Adjust it in what do you mean?
So, I mean, I guess with any program, if there's a staffing issue or there's been a long period of time where there's been a staffing shortage, would we then adjust the awarded amount.
I get it. I get your question. That's a great question. And that is built into all the contracts. If they're underspent as of June 30th, if they're underspent, the money is returned to the mental health board, but they could continue at the same contract level. You know, it's sort of like a hopeful structure, like, try to do it, and if it doesn't work, give the money back. So is that what you meant?
I think so. I think partly thinking about, like, you know, any program that we offer to you, two-year term to, could have staffing shortages or programmatic fluctuations or instability, and just knowing that a two-year term doesn't necessarily, that, you know, there can be some ways to account for those changes, even if we offer a two-year term, not just to see you change, but to any program, is something I just wanted a little clarification on and to state.
This is something Leon and Chris Wilson, our financial manager, just did this last year with an agency that has had some struggles staying fully funded. They just paid less, but it doesn't change the arrangement going forward.
But the other programs, to kind of piggyback off of this, other programs have a lot of vacancies and staff turnover, and they're having trouble hiring, but we aren't, you know, talking about those things necessarily with the other programs, only this one, and I don't think that's fair. And that's why I said, no, I think we should offer them 2 years. Well, you know, if we're going to look at the problems with staffing and things like that with Don Moyer, then we need to talk about that for the other agencies as well.
Well, I think there was a little difference. It was low level of engagement with kids, right? Like, they weren't really serving a lot of kids. Is that right?
So part of the struggle was they spent more time doing community service events versus serving the youth. So, you know, and one of the reasons why they have higher numbers in community service events is to attract more youth on the caseload. But again, you have to be very mindful and careful about doing something like that, because you tend to overextend yourself, and now it just becomes about numbers and less about the quality of the program. So,
sounds like a training issue. It needs to be more training. Should I keep talking?
I think you're absolutely right.
Seems like we have another quality improvement project.
Let's do it.
Well, yeah, because I think that program served, 16 last year? I mean.
Well, let me ask you another way, because I'm new to contingencies. You know, can we do funding based upon, you know, contingencies? For example, these things need to be in place before we issue another check. You know, is that an option? Because we can do that as well, if it's an option, if we can do it legally, I guess.
Well, we've got some requirements prior to any contract being executed that are listed here. So we're doing a version of that. I think what you're talking about is a more progressive approach, like pay for performance. And we have a contract, not a mental health board contract, but a developmental disabilities board contract that pays for performance. So we know how to do it, but it does take some time. It took us, we had a room full of people with calculators trying to figure out an approach that would not harm the agency, but would literally be paying for meeting benchmarks. It was a really fun project, but we haven't talked about doing that, but we could, I don't think that we could get it together really for the kind of concerns that y'all have been talking about today by the time we issue contracts. But we could...
We could talk about it for next time.
Yes, ma'am.
We don't really want to be punitive about it. We just want to say these are the benchmarks to meet, and if you don't meet them, then we have a conversation about it.
For the contract that I'm talking about, what we're consequating is it's not a level of service or number of people served. It's where the services are performed and what kind of activities the people are engaging in. Because for people with developmental disabilities, just having someone around is often all the system pays for. So we were asking for a higher quality of interaction. So in an example like this one, that would make sense. Something like that. Like, what are you doing with the kids? So.
With that, any other questions, comments? All right, we'll move on to the other Don Moyo Boys and Girls Club Community Coalition Summer Youth Initiative. It's for $107,000. The request was, which would be 100% of the total program revenue. This one, staff recommended funding $90,000, which is lower than requested, obviously. Let me see, previous year was $90,000, so it's no change from the previous year for funding. And they did recommend offering a two-year term for this one.
I think there's a note in here. This is something I was talking with one board member about earlier, that other taxing districts, which have the option to raise taxes to cover activities that they desire, probably shouldn't apply for mental
My
health
phone.
Funding. But
where? Oh.
And this is not directly what's going on, but some of the programs that are staged over the summer through this contract do involve special taxing districts who could fund them themselves. So there is like a little bit of an opportunity here just to pay a little bit less and say, like, focus on the grassroots organizations and the churches and the one-man shows that bring like really rich educational opportunities to kids over the summer, and less focus on the U of I and the Park District and Urbana schools who could just contribute the programs to this project without being paid by us for it. Like, it's just, we're a special taxing district. We shouldn't be funding other special taxing districts so that they don't have to look bad to the public asking for more money. So that was the rationale for saying they could probably do it for $90,000. This is such a great program that it would be really great to do it for the whole $107,000. So I was just looking for reasons, but...
Any questions? No. All right, we'll move on to First Followers, the Reentry House. It's about 54% of total program funding, which is $69,500. Staff recommended $58,500. It's an increase over the current level, but not the full request. They recommend offering a two-year term. So obviously it's about $9,000 less than the requested amount. I would really love to fund the whole amount. It was an increase. Last year was $39,500. So it is still $19,000 more than the previous year. So the proposed increase was 76% increase.
I would add, and I love First Followers. You know, I send lots of folks to First Followers. This organization did also receive a significant amount of ARPA money from the county board, which is not to say, again, that they can't use all the money. But I don't want us to feel like we're the only entity funding this organization.
And actually, can they use all the money? Because it appears they don't spend all the money.
Right.
Yeah, just be honest. I love them, but hey, I'm just being realistic
about
this.
You said it, Chris. I did not.
Gotcha. And one thing I want to point out. Oh, sorry. I want to point out how it does say under the special provisions that they need to collaborate with Rosecrans. Does Rosecrans have the special provision that they have to collaborate with First Followers?
Yeah, this is for the sake of that reentry project. If the like, and I love the conversation we were having earlier about shifting our thinking on that, but the current reentry project that's hosted by the county and partially funded by you and partially funded by the county really does need both of those organizations to be at the table. And we had a very nice long meeting with each. You weren't at the one, but you were at the other. First Followers is very willing to do this.
It looks like the special provision about participating in the reentry council is there for the Rosecrans program and the First Followers program, but the specific collaboration with First Followers is not listed under the Rosecrans one, so I think I would be in favor of adding that.
You know, that's an oversight here. I thought that is listed in our, let me see, criminal justice.
And it's just a minor thing, but like I said, I really, okay, well, I'm minor.
It says collaborate with providers of similar services, and in the full special provision, it says particularly First Followers and Women in Need Recovery. Perfect. So I think that's right. We've just been working on the language. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you can see the page. The Criminal Justice PSC contract is the one most closely related to the reentry council and the reentry work, and all we've got here is collaborate with providers of similar services.
Well, I just don't want Rosecrans to pull the same thing they're pulling with the clientele they're bringing in. Well, they didn't come to us, so what can we do?
I mean, interagency collaboration is part of what we ask all agencies to do, and if they're not doing it, I don't know.
While you talk, I'll confirm, because Leanne and I have been working on those.
Go ahead, Jen.
One thing that I will say that's very hopeful about the work that the Reentry Council is doing is they're under new management. They are coming to the board with, hard numbers on a regular basis. It's not just this kind of, nebulous, oh, we helped a lot of people. did you? they're coming with, great hard numbers of the people they served, of the demographics they served. You can actually find them under our Justice and Social Services Committee on the County Board website, as a service provider in town. I was excited to see those numbers and just see that work quantified in a really tangible way. I would just recommend anyone who's interested to check it out. I'm very excited about it.
I was wrong about including Women in Need Recovery there. It's just other providers of similar services, but it does, thank you, specific to First Followers.
How late are we going this evening? Because I need to go roughly 7:30 and we have 13 left.
Well, we can stop at 7:30. Awesome. Yeah.
I did have a question about the specific request from First Followers. So I know First Followers and Women in Need Recovery are both requesting a large expansion related to reentry home for developing a reentry home for women. And I was curious regarding the recommendation because First Followers is getting a larger percentage of their request and also a larger amount of the expansion of dollars for expansion than Women in Need Recovery. I was curious about the rationale for First Followers getting this larger amount that they're requesting and a larger percentage that they're requesting.
It's not a larger
amount. Kind of the stuff.
It's the same amount. It's the same amount, right? The percentage is different, but it's the same amount dollar wise. And the rationale was simply that we know that this is not fully funding those two applications doesn't set either one of them in a position to do that expansion, but neither has had an increase in a long time. So it was just taking the same amount of dollars and putting them into each agency. So if you want the same percentages, we can certainly do that.
I will probably have more to say about that when we get to the Women in Need Recovery one, but Women in Need Recovery is taking, the largest amount of shortfall that we have between the requested amounts from agencies and the amount that we have is sort of being absorbed by Women in Need Recovery, and I did want to point attention to that, especially as they're a women of color run organization wanting to expand their work for women in the community. I didn't know if any other board members had anything they wanted to add on that.
I think that, for me, the rationale has to do with Women in Need Recovery is not a local agency, and they have their local presence has been kind of up and down, including they didn't have a local board member for a while. So, like, this organization grew here, it started here, and it's very important to this community, but it doesn't feel connected here right now. I don't know.
I don't know if this is even pertinent to the funding, but one of the issues I have when I was looking over then is that the director, and I work with WIN, so I'm biased and positive as him, pays themselves $150,000, which is quite a bit more than both founders and executive directors of First Followers. I question that and a lot of other stuff I don't want to bring into the meeting. If there was a vote, I would recuse myself on the vote. We'll just say that, but we're working with them. I'll just leave it at that. Let's say I have a problem with the executive director making that kind of money. Their focus is definitely on Chicago, not in Champaign. And from actual anecdotal observations while working with them, I don't know that their numbers actually jive. But I can't accuse them of anything. We'll just leave it at that. I hate talking in codes, but again, this isn't a courtroom. I can't bring in witnesses, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, I don't know if I should have said any of that, but I did.
And I'm not 100% sure on my accuracy, but I think that the $150,000 salary you're referring to is for just running the Champaign location. That does not cover the Chicago. Okay. We'll research that one, but I think that was something I had questioned the one night. I'm like,
I don't think their funding was all for salary. I think they had other stuff, but I don't have the information.
So for First Followers, though, I don't have any problem with the funding recommendation by staff. Is there any questions about that one? No? Okay. We can move on to the peer mentoring for reentry, which is $95,000. 46% of total program revenue, and they recommended funding as requested and offering a 2-year term. And I think that is the same as last year. Yeah, so there's no change in that. So I think there's no problem with that. GCAP is requesting $61,500, which is less than what they had initially had requested because of after looking at they came back to us and said they actually don't need as much as they initially had requested. And then staff recommended funding for that $61,500 and offering a 1-year term. Yeah, go ahead, Lynn.
So we usually don't offer a 2-year term to a brand new organization, yeah. But given the conversation so far, should I change that for this one and offer a 2-year term?
One thing with GCAP being around the community for the last going on 40 years, many of us know their work already. So, a 2-year term or 2-year contract, at least from my perspective, would be fine because we know what they have done over the last almost 40 years.
Sounds good. Well, let's do. We can offer him a 2-year term. Next one will be Grow, offering requesting $159,000, and we recommended funding $2,000 less and offering a 2-year term as well. I think this is a great program. I'm glad to see how they've grown over the years, and how they've gotten better with, getting all their papers in order with us, with applications and everything. So I have no issues with that. Let me see how much it was. So it is an increase, about 30,000 from the year before, minus 2, so 28,000 more.
That is a pretty big increase. Yeah. They had been at the same level for 2 years, but that had been a large increase over the year before.
Okay. And if we offer them a 2-year term, it's not going to change for 2 years. So let's see, 129. So it's about a 21% increase. Oh, Molly, did you? Sorry, what? Can you?
I did not say anything.
All right, the next one is the Rosecrans Benefit Case Management. For $84,000, it's 99% of total program revenue. The recommendation is fund it as requested and offer a 2-year term.
So Leon and I did some math. He did math. I looked at current year levels. We got slightly different amounts. If we kept all of these contracts at current year levels, except for Crisis Co-Response Team, because it's adding a piece that has been federally funded, there would be about $30,300, and I also adjusted, because I went over by $60. So $30,300 that you could redistribute to other contracts. So it's something to think about.
All right. So this one was a 5% increase. The Rosecrans Criminal Justice PSC was $336,000. 73% of total program revenue. The recommendation was a fund as requested and offer a 2-year term. This one was also a 5% increase. Correct?
Which one?
Oh, I think I skipped one.
Oh, so you skipped the Child and Family Services, I think.
Yeah, so sorry. The Child and Family Services was $77,000, 38% of total program revenue. And they recommended funding at the PY24 level, which is $73,500, and offering a 2-year term. We had already talked about why the concerns we had about this one extensively. So I don't think there's any more to say about that one. And then the PSC is $336,000, which is a 5% increase from the previous year. It's 73% of total program revenue. Again, staff recommended funding fully for a 2-year term, and funding fully for a 2-year term. And then the next one, is there any questions that people have about these? I'm just trying to run through them. Stop me if there's anything you guys want to talk about. I'm just going to go through them. And then Rosecrans Crisis Co-Response Team, and Molly, you can just unmute yourself if you have any questions or comments about any of these. So Rosecrans Crisis Co-Response Team and Diversion Center for $410,000, 70% of total program revenue. Recommendation was to fund as requested and offer a 2-year term. I didn't have any concerns about this one either, other than what we've already talked about at the last meeting and this one. And then the next one is the Rosecrans Recovery Home for $100,000. The staff recommendation is to fund as requested and offer a 2-year term. And again, it's 19% of total program revenue. The thing that we always talked about is I'm hoping, there will be a presentation maybe by Rosecrans in the next year of how they are reaching out to minority communities. I think that would be nice to have a plan that they set in place in the next year and present to us so we can have maybe a quality improvement project on what they're doing for that outreach. And then the next one is Rosecrans for Specialty Courts for $186,000, almost $187,000. Again, 99% of program revenue. The recommendation was to fund at $178,000, so about $9,000 less. And then I guess we're doing a 1-year term on this one, right?
There's
because of the reasons
possible
we talked about
other funding for this through the county.
Yeah.
Or
fingers crossed.
Federal
hopefully,
funding.
Hopefully. And then the next one is the Terrapin Recovery Home, which I love. It's for almost $91,000, 87% of total program revenue. Staff recommended funding it almost $89,000, which is lower than requested but higher than the current year and offering a two-year term. And I think they've done a great job with this program. And we had the program director talk last meeting, and I love it. So I don't have any questions. And if no one else, we'll go on to the UP, the UP Center Child, Youth, and Family Program. 62% of total program revenue at $190,000. Recommendation was to fund at the current level and offer a two-year term. I would like to see more outreach from this agency as well. That would be nice to see them also maybe have a plan for minority outreach in the next year. So if we can maybe have a to-do list for some of these agencies, I think those are the two I definitely want to see an outreach plan. And then WIN Recovery, community support reentry houses for $244,000, 16% of total program revenue. The recommendation was to fund for $129,000, again, lower than requested but higher than the previous year and offering a two-year term. Again, it's about 16% of the program revenue. The previous year was 110. Thank you. Yeah, 110,000. Yeah. So still about 19,000 increase, just like the first followers as well. And then offering a two-year term as well, which they can always refuse, and then we can always readdress the next year if funding's change and things change. So, and then I guess the last one is the IDDSI. For $232,000. Why is that not on here?
It's on the very bottom.
I'm blind. I can't see. Like,
it's the very last page. Unless another page is missing.
In the booklet here. I know it's on here. It says we're funding 200.
Here, Special Initiatives Fund.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. The bottom of the 51. Yeah. So the CR. PEC, Community Life Support Short-Term Assistance, it's for $232,000, which is 100% of total program revenue. Again, this is a new contract. The recommendation is to fund through the IDD, Special Initiatives Fund, at the level requested and offer a two-year term, which I agree with. Any questions? Any comments? Any suggestions for changes to what I think is a pretty good plan? I mean, obviously we can always make changes, but I think I like the recommendations for, unless people want to, allocate some money from the Rosecrans funding to other agencies, that's always something we can discuss. We have next meeting to discuss that too, but something to think about.
Next week.
Yeah.
So next week is
the decision.
If you can, this board can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
But if you can decide about most or all of the funding requests, then we can start the contract process, which tends to take a while, especially because we've got conditions prior to contracting and then conditions that are specific to each contract. And we're a small team and need to review all that stuff as it comes in. So that's ideal. But if you don't get finished making all the decisions, you could have a special meeting subsequent to that. I have asked this very day if there's an expectation of more funding for us. And the answer was maybe, but then there's also a threat of money being taken away. So I don't think I want to create a second, here are some that you could fully fund later if there's more money. Because I think the chances of getting more money are good, and then having it taken away are also good.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. All right. With
that, I did have a question. Sorry.
Yeah, no worries.
Professional question asker here. I just wanted to go to the Rosecrans Crisis Co-Response Team application. I wanted to say a couple of things and then ask a question. So I know that this request is large, and honestly, I would like to have seen the city of Urbana step up to cover some of this instead of expecting the mental health board to do it all. I just wanted to say that, but I think this is a really important preventative program. I wanted to hear a little bit more from Lynn about the condition regarding meeting the representatives from the police department's meeting with the board. If you would just explain that a little more and the rationale, because I think it's really important.
I think that's in a couple of contracts, right? Like we have the, there are three contracts that involve other county departments and then also other units of government. I know everybody needs to get out of here, but it is criminal justice, PSC. I think we have a good collaborative relationship already. Drug court, we're really trying. Like they want to, we want to. It's just those pieces aren't really together. But this one, there's been no communication at all. I don't even know if Urbana Police want this program. I don't know if the city of Urbana wants this program. No one has said they want this program. All we know is that the federal money is running out. And the agency applied for, I think they applied for an alternative or an extension to it. But the fact that Urbana doesn't even talk to us about this is really like, I think, like, we know it's important. I know because I meet with, you know, we meet with the CIT steering committee group and we hear about all the people in crisis and showing up at hot spots in Urbana. So the program is doing what it's supposed to do. But I feel like it shouldn't be on the agency to tell us that. I feel that the other units of government should come and talk to you about whether they like it, what they're getting out of it, what could be better. I don't even want to be the go-between. I think they should come here and talk to you. If there's really no money in their budgets to support any part of that, that's fine. It's the program is doing what it's supposed to. So, but I think Urbana has some money. And I have to keep going and meeting with their consultant about what they should do other than police. And, you know, so this is a great example.
Meanwhile, they're asking for more police. So this is, I find what you're saying, like, very, very frustrating.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. If they're asking for more, if the city of Urbana is asking for more police, so they could give money to this program, I'm not quite understanding the logic there. And I think the idea of having the representatives from the departments come to talk to the board about how the program is going and if they want this program is important. I think we need investment from more parts of our government besides the mental health board for a program like this, because it, you know, meets so much more than I think it, relying on the mental health board to fully take care of this is not the direction we should be going. And it seems like that's the direction that we're going in even more now. So I just wanted to make sure that we had a little space to discuss that.
Yeah, I think that was good. Thank you, Molly. You know, I think it's definitely something for us to consider, you know, talking with, getting hopefully in reach with the Urbana mayor and the police department. Like, we shouldn't have to reach out to them to get these things, but like, if we're going to fund them, I do want to hear from these people, you know, like it shouldn't have to. It should. I mean, again, I'm glad the agency is, you know, applying and doing what it's supposed to do. It's sad to see that everyone is doing what they're supposed to do. But at the end of the day, you know, a lot of these at the end of the day, the people who are hurt by not funding these things are the people in the community and not the people in power. I agree. I think maybe we need to put the people in power their feet to the fire a little bit to get them to do what they're supposed to do.
So I don't think that this is the agency's problem. This is something I need to do. Like, it'd be a dream come true to have intergovernmental agreements, but I feel like that's a North Star. So. Yeah.
With that, I will move to agency input. If there's any agencies here that would like to participate, now is the time. We'll leave it to 5 minutes per agency or per participant. Any agencies in the online? All right. Seeing none, I'll move on to board announcements and input. Anything? Nope. With that, I will move to adjourn. All right. See everybody next week.